Hey there. Today we have a special interview episode with Leah Garvin. Leah is the team whisperer, and she provides business owners and team leaders with simple strategies and tools to communicate better with their teams, reduce overwhelm as managers, and turn their employees into profit-generating machines. She is a two-time best-selling author of The Unstoppable Team and Unstuck. She's a TEDx speaker. She's the host of a top podcast called Managing Made Simple and a team operations consultant. Her experience leading team operations within Google, Microsoft, Apple, and Bank of America really gives her all the tools that she needs to do the work she's doing today. She's a sought-after expert in the media, featured across Inc., Fast Company, ABC News, CNN Business, Forbes, U.S. News and World Report, HBR, Yahoo, and TV News. So she knows a few things about speaking with the media and public speaking. So stay tuned as we get into this interview with Leah Garvin. Welcome to Her Spoken Image. I'm April Lokar, founder of Semi-Conventional and Thought Leadership Consultant. Are you ready to make a greater impact using your unique perspective? I know what it's like to realize you're in the middle of your career and want to create a new path. I've pivoted from school teacher to corporate trainer to entrepreneur with lots of lessons learned along the way. If you want to use your authentic voice to speak up with confidence, you're going to love it here. Each episode, you'll get actionable tips to master public speaking like a pro while honing your spoken image so your message comes through loud and clear. And we'll do all this through a semi-conventional lens that blends a little tradition with a lot of feminist perspective. Sound good? Then let's get into it. All right, we are here today with Leah Garvin, who is an amazing entrepreneur, speaker, author. It's so good to have you here, Leah.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, likewise. Would you tell the listeners just a little bit about kind of your story, how you got here, what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am the team whisperer. And what that means is I'm a team operations consultant, and I help businesses large and small find more ease in managing their teams, in streamlining their team operations, and just having a better experience overall. And this came to be from working in the corporate world and big tech for about 10 years, where I did team operations and program management. And in the work of kind of helping people get their work done on time and set deliverables and milestones and team process, I kept finding the same kinds of things come up. Like when work wasn't getting done on time, or when the quality was down, or when, you know, there was miscommunications, it wasn't because people weren't smart enough or weren't dedicated enough or weren't good at their jobs. It was these kind of interpersonal communication issues were showing up.
Yeah.
And I would bring that up and try to fix it. And a lot of times working in tech, in the product side, people said, you know, focus on work first and people stuff later, or, you know, shouldn't you be in HR if you care so much about people? And it's like, no, I firmly believed this is fundamental to how work gets done. And so I folded this into my work, but I really wanted one day this to be the main way that I approach work. So about 2 years ago, I left my job at Google, I was at the time, and launched my business to support teams in a really hands-on way. And I've just loved it since the beginning.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that so much, especially thinking about it from the tech side of things. I worked for one corporate job where it was in their technology office. They were very much following kind of the Google and Amazon, you know, AWS type of model for warehousing and things like that. And I can so relate with the people come second.
Yeah.
the work first, the products first.
And yeah.
It's definitely a different dynamic.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, you know, some teams get it in pockets, or like when I, you know, I was able to really always help teams work better and more seamlessly. And it was like, how are you doing this? What's the secret? And it's like, it's all the stuff I'm telling you that we need to be doing. Right? And so it's been really fun to do this with small businesses or corporate teams from the inside out, because you know, I'm all about simplicity, and simple shifts can make such a huge impact. And that's really where this concept of the team whisperer came from, was, you know, there's like folks at the top of an organization have been talking about strategy and priorities and all these things, you know, forever. And team members on the ground level, maybe it's the first time they're hearing it. And so there's like continually these disconnects in communication around, you know, priorities, around motivation, around goals, around incentives. And I've found that because I've been situated in different levels and just kind of positions within these different kinds of companies, I started to really see where the breakdowns were happening, and I can close those gaps in the work that I do. And it leads to, yeah, higher profitability, lower turnover, and actually really concrete benefits. So it's been really fun.
Yeah. So thinking about the communication side of things, you know, I mean, this whole podcast is about, you know, how you use your voice and communication and that sort of thing. So when you are working with teams, and even just in your own networking and things like that, how important do you see your voice and the way that you're using it being in the impact of your overall communication?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think when I was in the corporate world, I think I struggled to really find my voice, because when, you know, if you are really passionate about something, you might be called emotional, or you're not, you know, if you raise risks because your job is risk management as a program manager, you're not a team player. And I felt like you're kind of, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't in certain situations. And I was a really high performer and I wanted to do really well. And so I really wrestled with that. And so I think, as a consultant and bringing in some of both my coaching experience and then, you know, really marrying coaching with advising around really how teams can get work done effectively, using that to both empower a manager or business owner to figure out, you know, what are the little shifts that they need, and then offering them solutions that they can try. It's been really fun to be able to express a lot of the stuff that I really knew would work, you know, if I had the opportunity. And I saw it work in pockets in the corporate world. I developed a lot of these strategies in the corporate world. But and for that to be celebrated. So, and then I also, through this work, recently launched a book. So that's another way I've been expressing myself. I have a podcast, Managing Made Simple, where I share a lot of the tools and tips and strategies that I want to help share to help make managing easier for folks. So it's been really fun to find, both through the consulting work, doing workshops, training, and one-on-one consulting and coaching, as well as through these different endpoints like writing and podcasting.
Yeah, that's such a good point that it's more than just the one modality, right?
Yeah.
It's the communication aspect with, yes, using your voice and having different ways to go about that. And you also mentioned, you know, testing things out, which I love as that concept, right? Where we're looking at, let me just try something. And this might not work for my team, but let me try it and see, because maybe it will work. And maybe that will help my team, or, you know, my cohort, or the collaborators that I'm working with, you know, as solopreneurs and things like that. You know, a lot of people are kind of building their own little village of people that they're working with, and just testing things out to say, like, hey, how can we communicate best? And it's really important to test.
Absolutely. It's such a great point, because I think when we're a few things, when you're implementing anything with a team, you know, there's probably going to be pushback. So a framing I always love to use is, let's try this, let's experiment with this, let's test this for, and then set a really specific amount of time. Let's do this for 6 weeks, let's do this for 3 months, and evaluate as we go. And then, so I think that strategy you share is critical for doing any kind of, again, process, for change management, for anything. Like, we're going to use this new tool to track our work, or we're going to try this new meeting format, or whatever it looks like. But part of the testing is the evaluating piece. And I think sometimes we try something, we don't really reflect on how it went, and then we haven't really done the test part of it.
Right.
You know? And so, and that requires us to really look at, hey, is this working or not? And I think that's a way that, especially when something goes wrong, instead of quickly trying to resolve it or move on to the next thing. You know, let's say you hire a contractor or an agency, or you're a solopreneur and you are working with someone and it doesn't go well, you don't like the quality of the work, and you're like, oh God, now I lost time, I have to move on. You know, if you actually stop and say, okay, that was an experiment with that certain company, let me reflect on how that went and how I could have communicated better. And, you know, the more we're self-reflecting, the more we can improve along the way. And I think it can, it also takes the pressure off of everything having to be perfect, you know? And I think we've all been there where we maybe invest in something like a program or in someone, a service or something like that, and it doesn't go well. We're like beating ourselves up about spending the money and the time. And, you know, we're not actually saying, okay, what did I get out of it? What did I learn? What can I do differently? And it doesn't mean something's your fault. It means there's always something to learn from something that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I also love that you capped that with, you know, let's test this for some period of time.
Yeah.
And putting a time frame on that and saying, okay, we're going to try this for a few weeks, for a couple of months. And even thinking about that with other service providers you're working with, where, you know, yeah. I as you were saying that, I was thinking there's been a couple of, you know, people that I've worked with where, yeah, we have the option of, hey, do you want to do an annual contract? Do you want to do a quarterly contract? And I remember thinking, let's go quarterly just to see, you know, and it's not necessarily saying I don't trust them to hold up their end of the bargain, but honestly, on my end, where I'm like, am I really invested in this? Let's give it, you know, 3 months to figure that out before I commit to a whole year of something that, you know, I may or may not want to commit to.
Yeah.
You know, I even think about just, you know, your Netflix subscription. Do you pay annually or do you pay monthly?
Right. Exactly. Like,
no, I go the monthly route because who knows when I want to quit, you know?
Exactly. I know. It's so true.
Yeah. So I think just having that end point on what you're testing out, you know, and even if it's just for yourself, hey, I'm going to try using, you know, this method when I'm talking to people, and I'm going to try it just for this week and see how my conversations go, or whatever it is. But having that end period, so like you said, you can evaluate, that's the piece that we often let go by the wayside.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So thinking about other things that you've done, I know you've spoken, you know, on the TED stage. I know, you know, you've written a couple of books, you know, things like that. So speaking at events and networking and all of those types of things. So tell me a little bit about the difference that you've experienced in preparing for, say, a TED Talk versus I'm going to this conference and I'm going to be doing a speech.
Yeah. So the TED Talk was really interesting because for years and years, I was really terrified of public speaking. And so like the thought of doing a TED Talk like was ridiculous many years ago. And basically about, I guess about 10, 11 years ago, I was working on a team in a big tech company, and I like one day I had to give a presentation in front of a team that I worked with every day. And I found myself so nervous. I was like shaking, and I was like, what? Like, these are people I'm friends with. I see them every day, like standing up in front of this room. Like, I can't have this. This is going to be the most limiting thing in my career and anything that I want to do. It was such a wake up call. And I felt like when I reflected on it, if I wanted to give a presentation for a team or in a big kind of town hall or whatever it was in the company I was at, I would need to prepare so much to not be so nervous. Like I would need like at least a week, and I had to practice it so many times. And so I said to myself, I got to fix this. And so what do you do with public speaking? You have to face it and like volunteer to do more public speaking. Yeah. And so, you know, the only way around it is through it with that kind of fear, because you start to see that, okay, I survived. And so I took a class on public speaking where you had to go up in front of the room and do little talks. I took any training I could inside of the company I was at, and I would volunteer to give presentations, you know, as much as I could. And it took a really long time. Like it took years to get better at it. I did improv classes, like everything. And when I would change jobs or companies or roles, I have to start over again because I was meeting new people and it made me nervous again. And
yeah,
but I kept working on it and I slowly started to get better and better. And in certain kinds of teams and companies, I was reflecting on it, like at Google specifically, you know, there's an assumption that you'll just be able to present in front of a large group of people without any training. And I thought that was really weird. Like, of course we'd be nervous, you know, there's ways to get support. But yeah. I think that also forces you to take it in your own hands and to do something about it. So I continued to pursue trainings and different things like that. And, you know, flash forward to about 2 years ago, it's 3 years ago now. I was like, you know, I really thought to myself, I really want to do a TEDx talk. I have an idea. I want to talk about stuff from my book Unstuck. I really want to get this out in the world. And, so I got a coach to work specifically with me on that, to really kind of help me fine tune my talk and how to deliver it and the application process. And then when I got selected, I was like, oh my God, what have I done?
now you actually have to do the thing, right?
Yeah, like, oh God. And then that was this whole cycle again of like, I felt ready, but I felt it was just as possible that I would get up on stage and completely black out and have no idea. Like I didn't trust myself to like that wasn't a possibility.
Right.
And that was really scary. And I said, okay, I am going to have to practice this so many times and get coaching and have it where there's no way in the universe that will happen. And so the book, like by the guy that runs TED Talks, Chris something, I forgot what it's called, says like most speakers practice 200 times. I practiced mine 234 times. I had a counter on my phone. I practiced my talk jogging. I practiced it with my eyes closed. I practiced it doing jumping jacks. I was like, okay, what are the ways I can simulate having like an adrenaline heart attack, panic attack,
right?
Everything. And I had some fantastic coaches and I did it and it went really well. And I felt so good with how it went. And I share that story for a number of reasons. One, because if you see me and you're like, oh, she can do a TED talk, but I couldn't do that. It's like, no, I also couldn't do it. And I worked my butt off to be able to get there. Right. And I said, okay, I want to do this. So I have to get the support. Two, I share it because once I did that and it went well, and I was happy with it and I saw that I could do that, I was never afraid of public speaking again. It literally like unlocked something in my brain.
Yeah.
And about a month later, I was in January. So 2 months later or three, I went to South by Southwest to do a book reading on Unstuck, my book. And I was like just in front of a huge auditorium of people and I barely prepared. And I was like, I nailed it. Like I didn't have to. I could just riff on it.
Right.
And now with my podcast, and I've done a lot of TV interviews since for my promoting Unstuck, and I've done quite a bit for, you know, talking about workplace things in general. And it's just like, I enjoy it now. And there was some like, so that's really, you know, the way I prepped for that sort of opened the floodgates to feel free of this fear. And you think for anyone that's really struggling to kind of find your voice and the authenticity of it, I would also say like, to just show up, record yourself, listen to it. Like when I started doing a lot of video content, I just would record the camera and I would go and I just kind of started doing it more and more and more every day. Yeah. And same with my podcast and you do find it pretty quickly. And it's okay if it's not perfect at first. It's okay if you're doing a lot of editing of it or you just put it up and it's kind of messy and whatever. You know, I think there's a real drive to have everything perfect before we share everything, which can both make it take forever to share something or we give up because we can't get it perfect or we lose interest or we don't have the time. I don't mean not having it thought through, I think, but we all know when something's like close, but not perfect. And when it's bad,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think trusting yourself, getting feedback from people like, hey, does this resonate? Does this land? And then being okay with learning through doing.
Yeah, I love what you said, that you mentioned authenticity as well, because to me, as you were talking through that, it sounded like you sort of found your way into just who you are as a speaker and being comfortable, you know, and obviously having the just the sheer reps of preparation for a TED Talk, which, you know, is something that I've talked about on this podcast a number of times where, you know, preparing for a TED Talk is so different than preparing for, you know, a networking chat or preparing for speaking on a stage, because a TED Talk, you kind of get that one shot, right? And it is scripted. It's not, you're not interacting with the audience. It's a talk. It's a speech, right?
Yeah.
And so it's very different than the preparation for probably anything else that you're going to do other than another talk like that.
Yep.
But when you think about the authenticity of it, you know, you're putting in all these reps, like you said, I mean, 234, I think you said times. That's so many times to prep for, how long was it? Like 10, 11, 12 minutes?
Yeah, like 12 like that?
Yeah. I've watched your TED Talks and it was really great. Mm-hmm. And I remember just thinking like, she must have run through this so many times.
I did.
And, well, and you wouldn't think 200 times, you know, that sounds like this astronomical number, but if you're doing it multiple times a day, you know, I mean, that's, it's just like you said, those reps to kind of find that groove and dig it into your brain so that you have it there.
Totally. And I would say for things like an interview or a networking chat, if you're on a panel for, if you're on a TV interview. So TV, let's put that, I'll talk about that in a second, because that's really short and there's some specific things you want to do with that. But let's say you're going to be on a panel or you're interviewed. One thing, one place I think we can get stuck is thinking like, what if someone asks me something and I don't know the answer? Or if you're doing a panel with your work and you're like, what if they ask me something I can't talk about? Like, the answer is prepare for that, you know, like think about it and get ready.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I think we have so much fear around. So with the TED Talk, there wasn't going to be questions. So that wasn't something I had to prepare.
Right.
But if it was like, okay, afterwards, I'm going to have a Q&A on this, then that's a whole different set of preparation, like you're saying.
Yeah.
And I think with, you know, you want to have a quick and concise kind of elevator pitch. What do you do? Who you are and what do you do? That's, you know, not too long-winded. That gets to the point. Yeah. That's interesting.
Right.
You know, you want to have, and whatever you're worried that someone might ask you or might, you know, might come up, to think about it. Like when I was working at Google, I did a lot of, I worked on diversity inclusion. I did a lot of talks around that. And when I would go to present like in an event, I was worried someone's going to ask me specifics about Google that I couldn't answer, right? And so instead of just worrying about that, I said, okay, what am I going to say if someone asked me that? And so I thought, okay, well, saying, you know, obviously I'm not able to talk about specifics of Google, but in general, here's what I'm seeing in the industry. You know what I mean? Like that answer doesn't sound like, I don't know, or don't ask me that. I can't say that, right?
Right.
So to start to think about that, what is your, if you're in a job interview, if you're on a client meeting and you're worried someone's going to ask you, you know, that's something I think a lot of us are afraid of. What if I embarrass myself, but I don't know what I'm talking about? It's like saying, hey, let me go talk to the team and I'll get back to you by the end of the day with an answer. There's nothing wrong with saying.
Right.
And so I think getting more comfortable with these worst case scenarios and practicing them and literally saying it out loud so you hear it. You hear it doesn't sound weird. You've vocalized it. You're starting to get those reactions, like you said. And then that really works too. And it is a different kind of prep. And I think for kind of speaking of different kind of prep for if you're doing something really short, like, you know, a TV interview, that's about really speaking in sound bites, you know, recognizing kind of landing a point in about a sentence or two, kind of seeing the cue when someone's ready to change the subject and, you know, and being ready for a really quick answer of how to kind of address something if you hadn't thought about it, because I will tell you, even if they tell you to send speaking points and like, hey, we're going to script the script, they don't. The news guy, the news anchor will ask you whatever comes to their mind, literally. And it's like, oh, I didn't know that's what we're talking about. And you want to, you know, you want to be ready. So
I think,
you know, how do you deal with not knowing the answer is something that really helps us, I think, feel prepared even when we can't be fully prepared.
Yeah, I've heard that so many times from clients that I've worked with and other entrepreneurs that I know that have done TV where they say, yeah, you might have all these predetermined interview questions, but they're not going to ask you probably half of those, and they're going to go with whatever other thought came into their head, like you just said.
It's, I know.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's funny. Like, I was on CBS LA. It was really exciting. I went down to LA. It's just shot in a big studio. Yeah. And they were like, it's really, you have to stick to the scene points. They're really, you know, I had to write them all out. They wanted all these stats and data and all this stuff. And it was about like strategies Gen Z or new grads can use to be marketable in the job.
Yeah.
And she literally asked me no questions about that. Later, she's like, what do you think about social media? And I was like, what? Like, what are we talking about? I was like, my opinions on it? I don't know. Like, it's just so random. And, you know, like sort of letting your guard down and being like, okay, I'm just going to have a conversation. It's just going to be whatever comes up. That's really how you have to prepare because, yeah, right. It was like very left field.
Yeah. And I think you also mentioned something about preparation earlier when you were talking about getting better at public speaking and taking improv classes.
Yeah.
That's something I recommend to so many clients that are really nervous because, like, you're talking about all of these ways to, you know, think about that worst case scenario, think about those questions that you might be asked that you don't really want to answer and how you're going to think through that. And I think so much of the preparation and really kind of acing some of these types of experiences is being able to think on your feet.
Exactly. And
so, like, those improv classes, I can imagine,
you know,
helped you to think through, like, how do I riff off of someone else? And how do I get better as a conversationalist, you know, and things like that.
Yeah. And actually with the TED Talk, they recommend you practice it in many different ways so that you're not like, memorizing actually tends to get people stuck. Cause if you lose the next word, you're screwed.
Yes.
And so I think too, with improv, like you're saying, like you open up these different pathways for dealing with, you know, where that might go.
Yeah, when it comes to kind of like the improv side of it and having those conversations, like you just said, not over scripting it to the point that if you forget a word, then you're just completely thrown off.
Yeah.
Again, that's something that I work with clients on. Where you don't want to have just the script written out. You can start with a script, but like you said, practicing it in different ways, I think, was such a good point. And it's such a great way to help people to balance the knowing what you're saying, but also being okay saying it slightly differently this time. Yeah. And sometimes I think when you allow yourself that freedom, you sort of fall into, you know, better examples or a better way of saying something.
Exactly. And building on that, and this was the thing I was thinking of a minute ago, it's totally aligned with what you're saying, is making it your own. Sometimes we have to present something that maybe someone else had the prompt or someone else asked was this thing, or you're giving a presentation at work about something. And I think we're most comfortable when something is our own thing.
Yeah.
And for example, I run a lot of manager trainings, and if a company asks me to build a training about a very specific thing in this certain order, I'll say, you know, I can use the essence of this, but like I have to make it my own because obviously like, you know, if you had your own training, you just run it, right? And so it's like, and it's very, very hard to feel comfortable delivering a speech or a talk or a training or something when it's not your own. And so find the ways to make it your own. Like you just shared an example of weaving your own stories, right? Like, hey, you know, there's general best practices of how to like deliver a feedback training, right? There's some basics, right? So, but the stories that I share and the examples and the, you know, hey, here's when I had some really hard feedback and how I dealt with it, or here's the way I coached a manager through that. All of that is yours. And so if you have to talk about something that it wasn't your original idea per se, like you can absolutely make it your own with the examples and the tone and the way you tell it. And that's a way to make it more memorable for yourself. And so, and to bring those nerves down. And I know that when I was in my early career in tech, I felt so much imposter syndrome because I wasn't an engineer and I wasn't you know, from a technical background. And I was like, you know, I can't have a, you know, a debate with an engineering manager about this. I, you know, I know this team stuff. I don't know about that. And that was the key. I didn't realize till later, like, no, my superpower is the team stuff. That's what I can talk about. And it doesn't, he's not looking to me to give him technical advice. And that was me taking on this, I have to be an expert at everything, you know, which a lot of us can fall into that trap. but leaning into what is the piece that you bring to it and adding that to the conversation and not looking at it as a gap, you know, is yeah. really important to fuel that confidence. And that's another thing you can do if you get caught off guard, you know, and saying, hey, you know, this is, you know, that's a really awesome question. This is really the area I focus, right? Here's really yeah. how I might look at it from this lens. And, you know, if someone's like, that's not the way I asked that question, you know, like, well, then that person's a real unusual case with someone that just doesn't, you know, is not very nice, but,
right.
Typically that doesn't happen. And we're so scared. What if I look bad or dumb or, you know, like I'm not prepared. And so these strategies really help you get around that.
Yeah, the worst trolls are certainly online and not in real life. If somebody is showing up to you speaking in person, or if they're having a face-to-face interaction with you, even if it's on Zoom, they're probably not going to be a complete jerk.
Yeah, you know,
because then their face is out there, right? Like the keyboard warriors that are the ones that, you know, if you can survive social media, you'll do fine in person. Yeah.
exactly.
Yeah. But it made me laugh when you were saying, you know, that imposter syndrome piece. It made me laugh because literally yesterday I was telling someone on my team that you don't want me making PowerPoint slides. Can I? Yes. Do they look fine? Yes. But it's going to take me way longer to do that than to just give you my bullet points and have somebody else do that piece of it. Yeah. And so that's something I personally have also learned over the years, is just being upfront with what is my zone of you know, genius, to use that term, or, you know, what's in my zone of things that I excel at and what I'm bringing to the table. And knowing and being upfront with the things that aren't.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because that's someone else's area that they're really great at. Yeah. And so it's, you know, kind of taking us into, you know, hopefully your book, The Unstoppable Team, where it's putting those pieces together and really being able to weave those strengths into something amazing.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. The Unstoppable Team is, as you say, about, you know, these six different aspects of driving an effective team. And where it came together was observing, you know, when I worked in teams, large and small, where were there breakdowns of communication happening? Where were things slowing us down or feeling unclear? And it also tracks kind of the journey of being a team member, right? So we talk about how to set priorities and really connect the dots between company and team priorities and individual roles. Talk about onboarding effectively, how to make sure folks that join a team are set up from day one, team expectations and working norms. So as a business owner, team leader, how to not have to, you know, feel like you're always repeating yourself or like, I wish there was a second me. Well, we can create that by setting clear expectations. Yeah. we talk about work tracking, how to do that in a really, you know, lightweight way, but also that gets you that information you need around status and capacity. Delegating decisions. And then I talk about performance, which is like, how do we evaluate success? How do we, I think one place that we can really fall down as a leader is having, you know, expectations not relate to how someone's evaluated, you know, like, well, I did my job, but I didn't realize I was also expected to grow the business or build a strong team culture, all these other things.
Right. Well,
when we map that to the evaluation, then people start to do it because it's what they're getting paid to be doing. So the book shares this system and how you can implement that on your team, or, you know, partner with me to help you implement that on your team. Cause that's one of the ways in which I support small businesses, is setting up the system and building out your own custom ops playbook through that.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And full disclosure, I bought your book, but then gave it to somebody before I read it. So I have my next copy here as well that I haven't started reading, but it's, to your point, it's that element where, you know, if you have all of these things in place, and I love the conversations about clear expectations and really just having a simple way to track the work and all of that sort of thing. Those are the things that I think we often, even just for ourselves, overcomplicate. And we, you know, we go, oh, well, I need to track where I'm spending all my time. Well, now let me go get this app and buy this timer and like make it the whole thing. And then I'm going to do it for like 3 hours and be like, this is too much. I'm not doing it anymore.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, that's a great example of like, I think make overcomplicating it, right? And I mentioned at the start of the conversation that I try to empower folks with simplicity and removing steps and making it easier. And so, you know, if you're doing something like an audit of your time to figure out what you can delegate, or figuring out, you know, well, how am I really spending my time? How should I be billing for this thing or whatever? You know, figure out what is the simplest way. Is it looking back at your calendar? Is it making a list on a notepad? Whatever it looks like. But you're so right. And that's what I see with teams. They've gotten some really complicated tracking system for their two team members, and no one's using it, and they're spending all this money, and it's frustrating everyone. And I think the question really to lead with is, how can I make this easier? Because when work feels easier, people can spend their energy solving the hard problems. Right. It doesn't mean everyone's job is easy, but you're removing the complexity and kind of organizational drag that slows people down and creates frustration. And then people are way more in their zone of genius, as you said, or in their flow state. So they're happier, they're doing better work, your business is more profitable. And I really see it as the secret of doing more with less, or being able to scale faster with fewer resources, is if you make work easy to get done, it will get done faster, right?
Yes.
And then you incentivize people for getting it done, right? Like, I think there's another piece of, well, yeah, it's easy, but if you are, you know, if you're incentivized based on something that's disconnected to that, then that's where it falls apart. So it all has to work together. And that's why I talk about that in the book, how all of these things build on each other and work together, and why the six really do come together as a set.
Yeah. I also had to just think about, you know, the way that we are using things like AI and automations. And, you know, while we want to streamline all this stuff and automate everything we can, I know for myself, there's been things where I'm trying to automate something and it's taking me longer to automate this than it would to just like do the task for the next probably 6 months just manually. So some of it is, you know, I think a lot of episodes of your podcast that I've heard, you know, you're referencing things like, okay, yeah, how do we make this simple? How do we work smart? How do we, you know, do things in a way that it makes sense? And yeah, just make the work easy. Cause sometimes the automations and all of this other stuff, and maybe you made a bot to do this thing for you, but then the bot breaks down. And now that's a whole thing to have to fix. So
exactly.
It's like, how do we do this in the simplest way possible? That just makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Well, I really appreciate you being here. Your podcast is great. Your TED Talk is great. Your books are great. So
thank you.
I definitely recommend to everybody, just Google Lia and you will find all of her things. But Lia, where can we find you specifically?
Yeah. So my website, liagarvin.com, that has all the good stuff you talked about. You can learn more about the work that I do with teams and businesses. You can check out my book, The Unstoppable Team, or my previous book, Unstuck. My podcast is called Managing Made Simple. So I would say, head to my website and reach out. You know, if you have any questions about the conversation, if you want to learn more about giving a TED Talk, kind of some of the stuff that we talked through today, I would love to hear from you. So, and you can get in touch with me through my website as well.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Before you go, thanks for listening. Hit that subscribe button, then leave a review so other aspiring thought leaders can find the show and hone their spoken image too. That's it for today. And remember, I'm rooting for you.